The Second Crusade. There are two dates for the Second Crusade. Some historians run it from 1145 to 1148, which really kind of signifies the end of the siege of Damascus. But there are some people who carry it further and will actually carry it to 1150 when they talk about the Fatimid rulers moving into the city of Ashkelon. Now, it's been almost 100 years since the last crusade, and what triggers the Second Crusade is Seljuk Muslim forces under the command of Ahmad ad-Din Zengi recaptures the county of Edessa in the northern part of the Latin kingdoms, which were created after the First Crusade. It was originally captured by Baldwin of Bologna in 1098. And, of course, this event makes Zengi a hero to the Muslims and, of course, will lead to a call for a crusade in Europe. Part of this is the fact that the Seljuks now, they've always been formidable. They were a little divided at the time of the First Crusade. But they have found a very good leader, and they will have a whole series of good leaders, culminating in the great Saladin during the Third Crusade. But part of this is the local crusading kingdoms, what is left of the crusading kingdoms, are going to ask for assistance because they see the rising Seljuks coming on the scene, and the Fatimids are becoming a little more numerous. So a second crusade will be launched in 1145. The first preaching of it occurs on December the 1st in 1145. Pope Eugene III proclaims a second crusade in what is called the Bull Quantum Praetorius. Remember, a bull is an official document, pronouncement by the papacy, signed with this magnificent giant seal called the Bull Seal. And he's calling for this crusade to retake the territory controlled by the Muslims. It's sent directly to the French king, who at this time is Louis VII. And funny thing, he's been thinking about going on a crusade himself, but initially, he chooses to turn the Pope's call down at first. So it's going to be kind of a strange thing. It's going to take Saint Bernard of Clairvaux, one of the great preachers of the era, to finally get everything underway. In March 31st, 1146, Saint Bernard of Clairvaux preaches about the need for a second crusade at the Vezelay. And then he writes a letter to the Templars, the Knights Templars. And this is the letter that causes a lot of controversy because, this is a quote from the letter, the Christian who slays the unbeliever in the holy war is sure of his reward, the more sure if he himself is slain. There wasn't any reference in the First Crusade that there was a supposition that if you died fighting for the Holy Land, you might go to heaven. And here, Bernard kind of ups the ante here a little bit. And it is St. Bernard of Clairvaux's preaching that really touches Louis VII. And he agrees to go, and he's going to take his wife with him, Eleanor of Aquitaine, one of those fascinating ladies from the era. Now, on May the 1st, in 1146, Conrad III, who is the first German king of the Hohenstaufen dynasty, he will lead the German forces on the Second Crusade, but he's going to have a lot of trouble. He's going to lose most of his army crossing Turkey and all sorts of other things. And then officially, on June the 1st, 1146, Louis VII says that the French are going to be committed. Now, one of the things that happens during the Second Crusade is it branches out. There's actually references to going into Spain in what is called Bull Divina Dispensione. Innocent III approves crusading into Spain, and in addition, crusading into the northeastern frontier of Germany against the Wends and other people. So this is we're starting to see the crusading movement here branch out rather than just focusing on the Holy Land. And quite frankly, they're not worried about recapturing the Holy Land. They're initially there to protect it, but to take back the county of Edessa. Now, the what we have on September the 15th in 1146, Zengi is assassinated by a servant that he'd threatened to punish. So if you're going to punish them, threaten to punish somebody, you better watch out. So, and of course, that was what made him a hero. So he'll be replaced by one of his sons, Nur ed-Din, I believe, is the person who replaces him. And now we have to get everybody there. All right. So you have everybody marching across. You have the Germans coming across their direction. You have the French coming across in a different way. Conrad arrives at Constantinople in December of 1146. Some of the German army doesn't arrive until later, and unfortunately, they did something similar to what happened the first crusade, is on their way through Hungary this time, not just Central Europe, but the way through Hungary. They went around raiding and pillaging, causing a lot of resentment. Well, once his army is there in Constantinople, the Germans want to get going. So Conrad III moves out in October of 1147, and his army stops to rest at the site of Delorium, which is the site of the first great victory in the first crusade. Unfortunately, one of the things that happened, and this is very typical of these later crusades, there's not a lot of attention paid to water sources and water supplies. Of course, the Muslims are very, you know, the Seljuk forces, the Fatimid forces, you know, they don't do anything without making sure that where they're headed as a water source, they want to stay near the water because that is essential. You cannot get dehydrated. You cannot run short on water. It'll sap your strength so quick. And that's something that the Crusaders frequently will forget. And unfortunately for Conrad, the Seljuks will attack him at Delorium and pretty much destroy his army. As a matter of fact, they captured so much treasure in the aftermath of the Second Battle of Delorium that the price of silver and gold actually dropped in many places in the Muslim world. And, you know, so that's just terrible. Now, the French forces, around March of 1148, the French forces are in Turkey, and they're at a place called Italia. Louis VII hires ships to take himself and his cavalry, which would be his nobles, quicker to Antioch, and then his infantry is supposed to march overland. Unfortunately, his infantry are going to be massacred by the Muslims very near that particular city. So it's pretty brutal. Now, when you get to the time period of around May the 25th, 1148, you have the crusading forces are going to try and capture the city of Damascus. Now, most of the forces are commanded by Baldwin III. There are some of Conrad III's survivors in this. And, of course, you have Louis VII's cavalry, which is also available. That's pretty much all they have. The trouble is, frequently you'll read about this and it will say, as a result of a strategic blunder, they failed in their siege and were forced to retreat. Well, that's a polite way of saying that the three guys couldn't get along. They couldn't agree on anything. Baldwin III, Conrad III, and Louis VII could not agree on anything. Whereas on the other side, the forces, the Muslim forces, were very resolute. Now, something else also happens in the Second Crusade. Conrad and Louis, or Louis, really don't give much, shall we say, they're not very complimentary of the local crusaders. First of all, they don't look like Europeans because they've adopted the dress of the era with some of the Frankish-style armor. In addition, they were absolutely astounded that the crusader kingdoms in the Holy Land would actually have Muslim support, Muslim supporters, and they didn't want any part of that. So to some extent, Louis and Conrad are going to cause a falling out between the forces that are the Muslim forces, which fear the rising Seljuk Empire, and the Crusaders. So that's going to hurt them as well. And then, of course, once they fail in the attempt to take over the city of Damascus, well, it's pretty easy. Okay, we were unsuccessful. So Louis and the family go home. Conrad, he heads home. And the crusading, what's left of the crusading states, are now left in a real bind. You have the, there's an attempt in 1149 by Raymond of Antioch to destroy Nureddin, which is the son of Zengi, near what is called the Fountain of Murad, but that is unsuccessful, and Raymond is then killed. And so then once Nureddin dies, then he's replaced by Saladin, probably the only thing positive to take place, and it has nothing to do with the crusade, is the fact that in 1149, the Crusader Church of the Holy Sepulchre is officially dedicated. But this is a disaster, and one of the things that really concerns everyone is the fact that, how in the world could a crusade called by a pope and preached by one of the most saintly of men and led by kings fail? So, of course, this is eventually going to lead to a third crusade, but you have the intervening things that will take place, which is in the movie The Kingdom of Heaven. What takes place in the movie of Kingdom of Heaven is that part right here, from where the end of the Second Crusade takes place until the beginning of the Third Crusade. Destruction of the Templars and the forces at the Horns of Hattin, the problems with the Templars and the king at the time, who really was a leper, and the defense of Jerusalem. Pretty well done. Obviously, they're going to make Balin seem to be a little bit nicer guy, but he is successful in defending the city. The only thing I didn't like about the film, Saladin's sister does not get killed. She is captured, but eventually will be released. She is not killed. I just hate it when they show the trebuchets of the Seljuk Turks hitting the walls of Jerusalem as if they are powered by jet fuel and have high explosives. It's not quite that way. But it has a lot of good background to it. So I highly recommend that. A good read on that from Runciman or from the Dream and the Tomb prior to watching the movie will give you the good historical background so that you can sit back and enjoy it a little bit more. Now, as far as sources on the Crusade, I've mentioned these before. The Dream and the Tomb by Payne. Runciman's History of the Crusade, Volume 2, in this case. And then on the internet, I've been remiss in not mentioning this before. Anything on the Middle Ages, there is a place called the Medieval Sourcebook, which has all kinds of primary sources. And you will find Pope Eugene III's call for the Second Crusade there. I was tempted to kind of read it to you, but, I hate to do that because that would take 4 or 5 minutes. And you really had to kind of be there to enjoy it properly. And actually, you really need St. Bernard of Clairvaux to come in and really preach it to you, if you will. So I hope you enjoyed that. It's usually a pretty well ignored crusade, because when you're teaching the crusade in school and in high school and even at a college level, unless it's a crusade class. I'm very fortunate I had a crusade class, and you just go, well, second crusade, it failed. Let's move on, because you want to do the first one that's successful, the third one with all the big names, a little bit of the fourth, get the children crusade, then go on. It's time to do something else. Bring the plague in. Do something. So I hope you enjoyed that. Don't forget to stop by summahistorica.com or go to the same website by using historyaccordingtobob.com. See what's there. I mentioned this before, that in May you're going to get a chance to see a video podcast if you have that capability. And it's a little something I did, a little 27-minute thing on medieval armor. I used some of my helmets and some of the materials and slides and things that I use in my class and what have you. So don't forget, keep those comments. I enjoy listening to your comments. I am sorry that I can't respond to everybody, but I really do appreciate that. It really encourages me to continue on and dig up more dirt on other people that we can study. And of course, send me your questions. I'll be doing a question and answer period here pretty soon. So thank you very much.